Hello, hello, hello. I think we're going to get started. Thank you all for coming tonight. This is week three of the Hemingway Summer Poetry Series, 50th anniversary season. Thank you so much. If you're here for that, great. If you're here because you're getting your car washed across the street, even better. Thank you for taking advantage of our poetry car wash. So I also want to thank Hop Farm for allowing us to do this here. Herb at the bar, Matt, the owner, Carly, the manager, they've been great, really supportive, and have just, it's been a great spot for us, and a great new home. We really love it, and we hope you're enjoying it too. The food, the beer, the space, the air. It's not Hemingway's, there's air. But we'll make do. So thank you. I just ate some chips before coming up here, which I should not have done. Now my mouth is very dry, sorry. Anyway, so I'm gonna read two poems, and I'm gonna do it as quickly as I can. By Diane Seuss. When I was in the writing department back in my 20s, I went there really seeking a community of writers. I was really excited about it coming out of high school as a young, naive poet, and I was really looking for community, and I did not find that in my university experience, the unnamed university. I just found like a workshops filled with people who wanted to be the loudest, smartest person in the room. And they did a lot of damage to some very, very young poets who were just excited to be trying something new. And I hope some of those people continue to write after that experience, because they got trashed and they didn't deserve that. And that was discouraging. So I kind of just dropped out of the writing department entirely. In my 30s, I surprisingly fell in with a crowd of MFA guys who were really excellent poets in town and generous and supportive and funny and did not take themselves so seriously but took their work seriously enough. And that really helped me find a community. And then the Hemingway's community, the New Yenzer community, everybody pretty much in this room, really, is slowly changing my mind about poets. Slowly. I'm still leery of them. But I want to read two poems here that I feel would have helped me a lot in my 20s, had I read them then, had they existed then, but they did not. Thanks, Herb. Thank you, Herb. And part of the thing when I started spending time with the MFA guys was just feeling inadequate to the company. Like, I had not read enough critically. I had not read enough widely to really add to the conversation. So that's still something I struggle with a bit. And this stuff, Seuss addresses those issues. So, modern poetry. It was what I'd been waiting for my whole life, but I wasn't ready for poetry. I didn't have the tools. Rethke, I appreciated the greenhouse poems, and decades later saw his bed, toilet, upright piano in the desolate town that he was raised in, not unlike the desolate town where I was raised. No greenhouse in my town, but the Green Giant factory, where mushrooms grew on cow shit. Wallace Stevens, I wrote a poem on loneliness in Jersey City, having no clue what he meant by the deer and the dachshund are one, and got an A anyway by faking it. The professor made us read Sunday Morning, which struck me as long. I couldn't focus yet. I was 18. A poem against heaven, he told us. Is there no change of death in paradise? Does ripe fruit never fall? That I could understand, having known some plums and that icky sweet smell of a dead mouse in the wall. Gerard Manley Hopkins, not modern per se, but my professor said one of the first modernists. So what did modern poetry really mean? Maybe just fucked up, as Hopkins was for sure. And tongue-twistery, and depressed. Jesuit, maybe bipolar. I stared at his photograph, the long nose and cleft in his chin, noticed that even in no worst, there is none. He had the wherewithal to put in the accent marks. To school us as to how to hear the thing. In WCW, Williams, my roommate and I called him Billy C. Billy Goat. I knew something of wheelbarrows, old women, and as I said, plums, but the prof showed us how complicated it all really was, the whole no ideas but in things thing, the near rhymes, depends and chickens and red, again. I was not yet capable of being smart and wondered if I ever would be, though I kept getting A's on the papers. Maybe because the professor felt sorry for me, and I'm not just saying that. The final modern poet was Sylvia Plath, a woman, blonde, and I did not trust blondes. Smart, angry, angry at men, I was told, depressed, cheated on, dead. I imagined her being in modern poetry with us, mopping the floor with us, with her developed mind, her ooh and ah sounds, her thesis, The Magic Mirror, on the Dublin Dostoevsky. I pictured her calling me a charlatan, like Gaylord did in class the week we studied her. He called her a charlatan psychopath, and me a charlatan for sticking up for her. I had to go back to the dorm and look up charlatan in the dictionary. A fraud, the dictionary said. A quack. Which, yes, I was. Though so was Gaylord. Who isn't a quack at 18? I wanted to love Sylvia, but to love her would mean loving someone who would have hated me. It would be a few years after I flunked out of college until I took a class called Women's Literature at the public university down the hill with a teacher named Stephanie, who looked a lot like Françoise Sagan, teenage author of Bonjour Tristesse, but older and with a cap of gray hair. Margaret Atwood, Toni Morrison, Adrienne Rich, Charlotte Perkins Gilman, Plath, Sexton, Lord, Kate Chopin, Alice Walker, Juno Barnes. I was beginning to understand, but barely. To ask a pertinent question now and then, like, where the hell was Langston Hughes in modern poetry? Dickinson in 19th century American lit. If Hopkins was a modernist, how about Dickinson, with her weird rhymes and what Galway Kinnall called her inner speech-like sliding syncopated rhythm, a counterpoint to her iambic lines? A horse straining at the bit in the direction of free verse. A woman who drove a motorcycle to women's literature, wore a fringed black leather jacket, and worked at the Kalamazoo airport in the booth where people pay for parking. She was shot and killed there by her ex-boyfriend. From then on, the class became something else. Stephanie had us over to her house, a damp place in the woods. She roasted a goat and served it to us, shredded on blue plates. The books had become more and less important. We spoke of them, huddled on the floor by the fire. I remember most of all the bushel baskets of apples and grapes for winemaking, drawing fruit flies. I'm not complaining. It was all more than I deserved. The goat, the greenhouse, the liberated blonde badass on her motorcycle. Sula, surfacing, Sunday morning, ripe plums, my education. Okay. One more, real quick. Thank you for indulging me. I just really love this new book of Diane Sue's. My Education is what this one is called. Not just what I feel, but what I know and how I know it. My unscholarliness, my rawness, all rise out of the cobbled landscape I was born to. Those of you raised similarly, I want to say this is not a detriment and it is not a benefit. It only is. It is, like a cobbled house is. Field stones and mortar, slipshod, spare parts welded crookedly, crudely, but cleverly. Skinny iron winding staircase leading to the attic, bolted on both ends. And up there, a gap in the window where the snow comes in and architects a little drift on the bed. and meals were cobbled, kernels on the cob, haphazardly arranged, not lined up in military rows, and sometimes a row was not filled in at all, and your teeth, when biting down, met an emptiness. And shotgun pellets and the rabbit meat. Stray hobnail dishes rescued from an abandoned house on fire, in an array of jewel tones would appear without warning on the table. A blood-colored butter dish, yellow perch on a cobalt-blue platter encircled in fried egg sacks, or duck on a pheasant thrown erratic on the back porch, payment for something given or not taken. When I'd been away and returned, I could see freshly the cobbled lushness of the trees and the arbitrary drift of brown spots on the white cows in the meadows, and the wireworm-filled tunnels in the morels at the base of the dead cherry tree. The cemetery is unsystematic, as is the library. Graves scattered like chicken feed, books strewn on old tables from canceled Sunday school classrooms. I loved books, but learned very little in school. I could read, so the reading instruction drove me nearly mad, and I plugged my ears, first with my hands until I was caught, then with something I could do inside my head that muffled the teacher's voice, like she was speaking into a canning jar. What I know of literature, of history, is spotty. I was a poor student, disengaged from the things I didn't need, and I knew what I needed, and that time to get it was now. When I needed Keats, I got him. I read enough to get the point, then tuned into his ghost. I read most of Joseph Conrad, having figured out that I could find some things repulsive and still require them for my project. My project was my life. There was no vision or overarching plan. There was only foraging for supplies, many of which were full of worms or covered in dust, like apples on the orchard floor and furniture junked on the side of the road. Have you ever seen a pie cooling on the sill and found yourself hungry enough to steal it? Or does that only happen in picture books? If you were like me, to learn of the gods, you must beg, borrow, or steal. Eavesdrop, as gossip is sagacity, a word I learned from Emily Dickinson. Don't underestimate direct experience. Ants know earth. Dragonflies know air. A cobbled mind is not fatal. You have to be willing to self-educate at a moment's notice and to be caught in your ignorance by people who will use it against you. You will mispronounce words in front of a crowd. It cannot be avoided. But your poems, with all of their deficiencies, products of lifelong observation and asymmetric knowledge, will be your own. Built on the edge of tradition, they will rarely be anthologized. I have camped at this outpost my whole life, as did my mother, who slept on sugar sacks in the basement or on the front porch, in early spring, when snow still clumped around fugitive crocuses, just to keep herself forsaken. Thanks for listening. Okay, Joan Bauer is going to come up, introduce everybody. I just want to let people know this slides a little, so don't lean too hard on it. Thanks a lot.